I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three. Cougars by 20.
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon, Cougar fans, and welcome inside another edition of Cougar Sports Saturday. Here on KSL News Radio, we've got a jam-packed show for you. A lot of BYU hoops as the basketball team gets ready to head down to Las Vegas for the WCC tournament. We'll have assistant coach Cody Feger, a former BYU great Tyler Haws. They'll talk about this basketball team. And, of course, week one of spring football is over, Mitch, and we'll have plenty to discuss on the gridiron for BYU football.
Yeah, it's going to be a loaded show. We'll also have BYU wide receiver Cody Epps join the program. So 3 hours jam-packed of BYU sports content, as always, here on Cougar Sports Saturday. And we want you to interact with us. You can follow us on Twitter at KSL Sports. You can also text us on the UCCU KSL text line, 57500. Interact with us. The poll question of the day, a lot to get to on the program.
We want to start things off, of course, though, with BYU basketball here on The Leadoff.
The Leadoff. A look at the stories making headlines right now. It's time for The Leadoff on Cougar Sports Saturday.
The WCC tournament is underway, and BYU still does not know who they're going to play. They'll await the winner of Santa Clara and Pepperdine, Mitch. And so it's going to be really interesting to see who BYU plays Monday night. They practiced this morning. They're going to practice again later tonight to kind of get a feel for playing hoops late at night, because that game they'll play on Monday night is scheduled for a 10 p.m. tip. And now that the tournament's here, a couple weeks ago there was some rumors that maybe Gonzaga and BYU would back out. That's not happening. Everyone's playing in this tournament. How do you feel about this tournament now, knowing that it's actually happening?
Yeah, I think that the tournament, it's fine. It's probably the worst tournament in all the conference tournaments in terms of fan experience, because all the games are so late. It's just a terrible setup where there's only two games a night. I used to like in the old Mountain West Conference tournament where you'd have that Thursday and you'd have four straight games all day of first round action. But I understand why this league sets it up this way. It's to, you know, set to cater to Gonzaga, one, but also help out the second seed. But really, it's a situation for BYU where it's nice to be already advanced to the semifinals, but it's a difficult spot because you don't get that chance to know who your opponent is right now. And as we know, you don't get a play on a Sunday or practice on a Sunday. So BYU is going to go in on Monday kind of just, you know, basically winging it, like going off of what they've done before against some of these teams. But, you know, I think that BYU is equipped to make a run and compete for this thing. And I think that, you know, a lot of people look at this conference tournament and just think, it's just simply Gonzaga, and it is their league. It's Gonzaga's world, and we're just all living in it, in the world's, in the word of Tom Hackett. But I think that BYU is hungry to continue to play their best basketball heading into ultimately the NCAA tournament.
Here was the head coach of the basketball program, Mark Pope, yesterday when speaking with the media on Monday night's game.
We're going to try and simulate game day as closely as we can tomorrow and then try and run it back Monday. It's just as, you know, I'm pretty sure that we're the only team in the country that is just choosing to play games where you don't practice or meet the day before. But we're going to make it work, and we're going to actually turn it into advantage. And Monday night, everyone's going to be like, man, those guys are really smart because they were super fresh. I mean, I guess that's what we're searching for.
And, of course, they won't be practicing tomorrow, Mitch. They'll be traveling down to Vegas tomorrow. I think they'll have a chance to maybe do some kind of walkthrough early Monday and then in preparation for the game. I hate, by the way, can I just say this? I hate that BYU has to play at 10 p.m. They're the only team in the conference in the Mountain time slot, and then they have to play in the latest game. I just don't know why this happens year after year where a team has to play this late, and then they've got to play in the championship game less than 24 hours. I just don't know why we can't move up the women's games by an hour, move up that first game by an hour, and have this game, whether it's St. Mary's, whoever, not have to play so dang late. I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's all catered to TV and ESPN.
Who's watching that late besides the diehards? I mean,
that's what
you're staying up for it, but the East Coast is not.
That's a great question, Matt, and that's why I didn't really understand why this conference even bothered playing it, because I was asking myself yesterday, I was watching our good friend Dave McCann on the call for, San Francisco, or no, Santa Clara and Pacific, and yep. I'm watching that game, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is on Stadium, and it's 10 p.m. at night. who's watching this? Like, what money is being generated? The gym is empty. The Orleans is completely barren of any person. Like, there's only, like, 20 people in the building. You know, you just go to yourself, like, why is the WCC doing this? Like, BYU and Gonzaga are already in. It is what it is, I guess. I mean, they wanted to have that additional revenue from TV, I guess.
I that would be the only conclusion, but it just, I don't know. It seems, we've talked about this before, but I still feel the same way. The risk is not worth the reward here. And if BYU were to go down there and someone contracts COVID-19 and they're out mm-hmm. of the tournament, it would be an unbelievable travesty. And also, too, I felt this way for a while, is especially this tournament, because you and I, Mitch, we remember the Mountain West tournament days, and you already referenced that here in the top hour. Those were fun. You go down, you'd watch those games all day. It was a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I had a blast. This tournament has never felt as interesting. Maybe it's the Orleans. I think some of it has to do with you could potentially play games on a Friday, Saturday, have a break, and then the Monday, Tuesdays, kind of. It just doesn't feel like this tournament doesn't feel exciting to me like college basketball tournaments used to. And so no fans, weird times. It's just, I'm having a hard time generating interest in this tournament. I'm being honest, Mitch. I really don't give a rip about this tournament. I'm already looking forward to March Madness.
Yeah, the fan experience for the WCC tournament has always been lacking, and they cater to their TV partners and ultimately Gonzaga. So it sets up for just a weird circumstance. And they also help BYU, too, because you get that Sunday off, because the WCC used to play on Sundays with their tournament before BYU arrived in the league. But, you know, it's a great opportunity still for BYU to try and get better because, you know, going into NCAA tournament play, you're not going to probably see anyone better. If you can get to the championship game on Tuesday, you're not going to see anyone better than the Gonzaga Bulldogs, who, to me, are clearly the best team in college basketball. I don't understand why there's still this narrative from pockets of the college basketball world where they're questioning the Zags. I hate how it's still this from Cinderella to powerhouse. Like, no, they've been so good for the last 5 years. I mean, they've kicked it into high gear as a program in recent years. And, you know, BYU's gotten better under Mark Pope, and there's still this sizable gap making you wonder how can BYU close that thing against Gonzaga. And we'll have, obviously, Tyler Haas coming onto the program in about 10 minutes or so to discuss what he thinks maybe BYU can do to close the gap against the Zags. But it's a great opportunity, another test to maybe stack yourself up against the number one team in the country if you can get to Championship Tuesday. But you got to get first by either Pepperdine or Santa Clara on Monday night.
Yeah, that's a good point, where really the only silver lining here is if you get to the championship, you got a chance to play Gonzaga, which there's no better preparation for the NCAA tournament because you won't see anyone better. To win or loss, I think you would learn a lot about that. And that leads into our Cougar Sports Saturday poll of the day, which you can find on KSL Sports. You can text us as well, 57500, about the poll, about whatever you want, really. But we're asking if BYU wins this conference tournament, they would have to take down the top-ranked Gonzaga Bulldogs. Would this be the greatest moment in Cougar basketball history? Yes, no, absolutely, no way. Where do you fall, Mitch?
I think it would because it would almost be like you're beating a national champion. You're beating a number one team in a tournament setting. You know, Gonzaga is a generational team. They're being stacked up potentially against the likes of 1990 UNLV. We're talking about them as one of the best teams ever assembled in the last, you know, 30 years of college basketball. And if BYU takes them down, yeah, that would be a heck of an accomplishment. This is a lot better team than 1981 Notre Dame with Kelly Trapuka and Woolridge. Like, yes, that was a good team in the day. I get it. But this Gonzaga team is fantastic. They have Jalen Suggs, who's going to be maybe a number one overall pick. And I hope that BYU gets this chance. If they could take down the Zags and win a conference tournament title after 20 years without getting one of these things, you couldn't win a conference tournament title with Jimmer Fredette. I mean, it would be remarkable. I think it would be the greatest accomplishment in program history.
I don't think so. And I don't think winning a conference tournament championship is nearly as valuable as just winning the conference outright in the regular season.
This is Gonzaga, the number one team in the land.
Mitch, BYU has beaten Gonzaga before when they were top-ranked and undefeated. And they did it on the road with fans in the stands.
This is far and away the best Gonzaga team
we don't know
ever
that.
Assembled.
We don't know that.
It's no question.
No,
it's
Mitch.
It's no question.
The season's not over.
Look at the numbers.
What if they get ousted in the round of 32? Are you going to still say they're the best Gonzaga team of all time?
I would still say in terms of sheer talent, yes. This is the best talent. They're going to have like four NBA players on this team.
Gonzaga doesn't have a great track record of producing great NBA players anyways, so we don't know if those guys are going to go on to do anything in the NBA because there's been a lot of guys who – Kelly Olynyk comes to mind. Is Kelly Olynyk one of the best centers in Bulldog
but
history?
But he got into the NBA. Is Jimmer Fredette a bad player because he didn't pan out? Like, come on. Like, if you get to the NBA, you're an amazing player. Like, I mean, even the Slava Medvedenkos of the world, they're great players. They're in the NBA.
No disrespect to the guys who go to the NBA. I'm just saying.
Medvedenko.
That's a good pull. You know, Vladimir Radmanovich, you give tip of the cap to that guy. But my point is, this Gonzaga team is fantastic. But we just don't know if they're going to be the best team ever. They've got to do it. And there's still a huge tournament left to determine that. So would it be a nice win? For sure. I would still take, if we're ranking wins over Gonzaga, period, I would take Jimmer's round of 32 win over that Gonzaga team. Now, that Gonzaga team's not nearly as good as this team, but the NCAA tournament is just so – it's just on another level. You can't even compare a WCC conference championship to ousting them in the tournament. That, to me, just holds so much more value than a potential fanless WCC win down on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's so hard to get a conference tournament title. We're seeing that. I mean, BYU couldn't win it with Jimmer. They couldn't win it with some of these great teams that they've had. And to actually get one and take down Gonzaga once in this setting, I think it could change the trajectory of BYU basketball, too, going forward. Like, there would be that belief. It would infuse this belief and optimism in the fan base. Like, hey, they can be taken down, and when they're at their best, it could really change everything about the future of this conference and BYU. So to me, I think from a trajectory standpoint, from in the moment with how good Gonzaga is, they're undefeated, they're number one, what it could do springboarding you into the NCAA tournament, I think it would be maybe the biggest moment. I think it would be the biggest moment in BYU basketball history.
We'll ask Tyler Hawes on the other side how he feels about a possible WCC championship and what it would mean for BYU basketball. Don't go anywhere. We'll have Tyler next here on Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back in. Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte. It's a championship weekend. BYU basketball going to be in action on Monday night, 10 p.m. tip, 9 o'clock pregame here on your legacy home of the BYU Cougars, KSL. And the opponent's still to be determined in the WCC tournament, but to preview the conference tournament, we're joined now by BYU basketball's all-time leading scorer. He's BYU TV analyst Tyler Hawes. Tyler, welcome on into the show again.
Hey, thanks for having me on today, guys. How are we doing?
Doing great. This time of the year is always special. I mean, it means so much more this year, too, after having it taken away a season ago. What were some of your favorite memories, Tyler, in the month of March as a BYU basketball player?
Oh, man, lots of amazing memories. I mean, some that come to mind, I think, you know, my freshman year, BYU was looking for their first tournament win in a really long time. And, you know, I can remember Coach, we played Florida in the first round, and Coach sitting us down the night before and telling us, we got this thing. We're going to go beat them. We're going to win this thing. It's our game. And then we went out and I think it was double overtime, but we got it done, and just so fun. I mean, the atmosphere was incredible, and really fun memory there. And then, I mean, my senior year was, you know, we got in that first four tournament out in Dayton, and we ended up losing the game, but really, really fun to be a part of. I mean, every game in March, there's just a ton of magic surrounding every game. Anything can happen. Really, it's, you know, there's standings and there's rankings, but anyone can beat anyone, and that's the beauty of March Madness.
Tyler, it's been a long time since BYU's won a conference tournament championship. When you were a player, I'm interested, where did winning a conference tournament championship fall in terms of team goals?
No, that was at the top of the list every year, is to win a conference championship, and that's what we were fighting for. Yeah, it has been a while since BYU's won one, and so I think that's at the forefront of everyone's mind, not just in the team, but all the fans want to hoist up a trophy, and Gonzaga's kind of had the reins for a really long time, and but, I mean, watching Gonzaga this year, this is as good of a team as they've ever had, right? So much talent, and it's just incredible the program and what they have going on there. Mark Few and his staff have just, they continue to get amazing players, and you see the guys they get, and it's incredible. But I think BYU, I mean, Coach Pope and his staff are building something really, really special and have a great vision for the program and where they want to get to. And I wouldn't be surprised here soon to see those tides change a little bit.
Tyler Haas is our guest here on Cougar Sports Saturday, KSL News Radio. You know, you bring up a good point, because I do feel like Mark Pope has closed the gap a little bit with Gonzaga, but just Gonzaga has a historic team in their program's history this year, and it feels like the gap's maybe gotten bigger despite the inroads Pope and crew have made, especially in the transfer portal and with recruiting. What do you feel like BYU can do to be even in that same conversation as Gonzaga on a national scale?
Yeah, I think it starts with the players and the guys and the recruiting. Right, and the program you're building. I think one thing that Coach Pope is so good at, and really Chris Burgess and Cody Krieger as well, they're great recruiters, and they're going to go out and sing the praises of BYU and all of the great things that come along with it. They want guys that are committed and want to play at a high level of basketball. But, you know, embrace everything the BYU stands for. I mean, they're starting to get those guys. I mean, the perfect example is Matt Harms. I mean, to get a guy like that, a 7'3" transfer, I mean, you got to give the coaching staff a lot of credit for getting that done. And you're going to see more guys like that. You know, just the vision and the goals that that Coach Pope has for BYU, Cougar fans and Cougar Nation should be really, really excited for the future. But I think it starts with recruiting and getting good guys. But then, you know, the way that BYU plays and the skill development and what they've done with players, it should make recruiting really easy. I mean, you look at Alex Barcelo and his development, where his career was, and what they've been able to get out of him and help him reach his ceiling as a college basketball player. I mean, it should make, you know, high school players and people looking for a good school, make them really excited about coming to BYU.
Tyler, you've watched this team as close as anybody this year, covering them on BYU TV. You watch those Gonzaga losses. They're 0-2. If they get a third crack at Gonzaga, what does this team have to do to beat them?
Yeah, you know, watching BYU and Gonzaga this year, obviously Gonzaga is so talented. I mean, you look at Suggs and Kispert and Timmy down low. I mean, they're just so skilled and talented, and the margin for error is so little with that team. You know, BYU in both of those games got off to a rough start, got put in a hole early, but I really felt like the second half of both of those games, they were right there with Gonzaga and pretty evenly matched. You know, I walked away from that second game going, hey, I don't think Gonzaga's not unbeatable. Like, they were definitely moments in that game where BYU could have taken advantage, and they got good shots, got open looks, and just didn't knock them down. And so, of course, BYU is going to have to put together a really, really good game and shoot the ball really well, take care of it, right? Can't turn the ball over against the Zags. They just make you pay so fast. But I walked away from that last game going, hey, the Zags are not untouchable. They're definitely beatable, and that's definitely the mindset of Coach Pope and his whole team and all the guys in that locker room. They believe they can, if they get another crack, that they can beat them.
Last thing for you, Tyler, before we let you loose. I remember, as you mentioned earlier, that memory against Florida in 2010, an unlikely source in Michael Lloyd Jr. rose up and, I want to say, had like a 23-point game and was huge. Who could be maybe an X factor for BYU in this conference tournament and the NCAA tournament that maybe if he can contribute a big performance or two, can help BYU make a run?
Yeah. No, it was awesome. That's the beauty of March Madness, right? Is different players step up, and yeah, Mike Lloyd was huge in that game. But yeah, anyone can contribute and get hot, right? So I think, the player that comes to mind is Gideon George. I think he's had moments this year where he showcased his talent and his ceiling as a basketball player, and I think he could play against some of these more athletic teams and really showcase who he is and the type of player he is. But I mean, I expect Alex Barcelo to be really big and come alive in the conference tournament and the NCAA tournament. So I'm excited for this team. It's a deep team, right? You look at all of the good tournament teams and they're deep. They got talent, 10 deep, and so it'll be exciting. Hey,
all right, that is Tyler Haas. Tyler, we appreciate it, man. Thanks for spending some time with us. We really, really appreciate and value your insight.
Thanks, Tyler.
All right, we got to get to a break. We'll have news, traffic, and weather up next, and we'll touch on spring football on the other side.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. On your legacy home of BYU Sports. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday as we get things rolling along here in hour number one. And however you're listening, we appreciate you spending some time here on a absolutely beautiful Saturday afternoon here in the state of Utah. It's 12:37 here from KSL Broadcast House. BYU Hoops, big task ahead this week. They'll be playing Monday at 10. You can, of course, hear that game here on KSL News Radio. Pre-game will start at 9 p.m., a late one. Another thing that's happening in the world of BYU sports right now that is, at least, it certainly piques our interest here, whereas we're diehard football fans. Spring football, week number one, is in the books. 1 of 4 weeks of spring football. Huge quarterback competition going on down there. Unfortunately, Mitch, for guys like you and I, it's all digital. We get a little clips from BYU here and there. We get to interview them a couple times a week. We do not get to see any football in person. To me, that makes it a little hard to really gauge what's going on with the quarterback battle. But based off the interviews, what you've heard, what you've seen, what are some of your big takeaways from the first week of spring football?
Yeah, I think one of the big things with the quarterback position, Matt, is that I feel BYU can't go wrong with this pick. I feel like the top three guys in Jaren Hall, Baylor Romney, Jacob Conover, I feel like BYU can win 8 or 9 games with any one of those three guys. I believe that. I feel like any one of them is ready for the big stage. I mean, you know, maybe Conover's going to have a little bit more of a steep learning curve, but you know, he's only 2 starts behind Baylor Romney and Jaren Hall in terms of experience, and he was around the program last year and saw how Zach Wilson operated. I just feel like these three guys, any one of them, is gifted enough to lead BYU to a season that I think Cougar fans will be proud of, and it will signal that progress continues to be made, and last year wasn't just 1 year fluke. So I think that's one of the big things that I take away. But also, it's an opportunity for just development across the board. I mean, you're hearing guys like Elisa Tuiaki mention players that probably in fall are going to be 3rd and 4th string guys that are maybe popping on in spring football. You know, guys, anyone that's been nicked up or banged up, they're probably erring on the side of caution to make sure those guys are healthy for ultimately the real battles, the actual game. So those are some of the big takeaways for me. What about you?
I agree with you on the quarterback position. I think you've got some good options. I would be a little worried about Conover. Just the schedule is going to be difficult. No game experience. He's someone who I just feel like if you're going to take the Conover route, I would rather them do what they did with Zach in his freshman year, where you go with an experienced guy. That guy doesn't get it done. You turn to the young gun, see what he can do. But he's ultra-talented, so I'm with you. I prefer Jaren Hall personally, but Baylor Romney's an experienced dude. He's had some nice throws from what we've seen in those clips provided by BYU. I think what really surprised me the most is what Elisa Tuiaki said about the safety group. And I get it, we're only 1 week in, but I thought it was interesting what he had to say. And here's what Elisa Tuiaki said about the safeties earlier this week in BYU spring football week one.
We're rotating all of them, and 3 practices in. Still pretty early to tell, but there, you know, there's guys that have played that look like they're gonna obviously be contributors. But out of all the new guys, I don't know if anybody's really stuck out. Yeah, there's still a lot of mistakes being made and a lot of learning going on.
Again, Mitch, it's week one, but I can't help but feel concerned about the safety position. I feel like last year you had Troy Warner and Zane Anderson. There was a lot of experience. And even before that, there just seemed to be a good mixture of when a new guy comes in, he's paired with someone who's been there. And that's not going to be the case this year. Yeah, you get Chaz Ayu back from injury, but he has played little to no safety during his career at BYU. And then who's that next guy going to be? I was hoping to hear from Elisa that maybe a Malik Moore or a Hayden Livingston was really sticking out and put in a lot of great work during winter conditioning, and that just wasn't the case through the week one. So now I'm like, oh, geez, what's going to happen at the safety position? I'm concerned because BYU, defensively, in total defense, they were top 10 last year, and right now I just don't have a belief that the Cougars are going to field a top 10 defense.
Yeah, well, and that safety spot, I do think that is a position that's going to be a question mark for sure. And a guy like George Udo, he's currently out because he suffered an ACL injury late in the season, so he's not practicing. When he comes back, I look to him, and he's kind of more that nickel, that cinco, whatever you want to call it, that hybrid position. Yep. That'll be coached up by Preston Hadley. I think that Udo's definitely going to be in that mix when he's fully healthy. But, yeah, I mean, you got to see that big leap forward from Malik Moore. I mean, he's a redshirt junior now, I believe. It's time for him to make that big step in his BYU career, because we've heard a lot of good things about him in terms of the athleticism. But now we got to start to see some production. And I think when it comes to spring football, we know that there's still, what, 6 months till these games are kicking off. But the thing is that you start to see some flashes of guys that they'll pop off in some moments in these spring balls. And it kind of just gives them some momentum. It carries over to the summer conditioning. And then in fall camp, they kind of hit the ground running. Mm-hmm. Because in fall camp, it's full steam ahead. You're starting to get ready for games. And you want to be ready to go on day one, where it's not necessarily like a learning curve. So, I think the safety spot is a little bit of a concern. I always felt that they need to go into that transfer portal and get a guy at that position. They tried to get the kid from Northwestern, Aaron Maldonado, who ended up going to Arizona. So there's definitely some interest to hit the portal. Jared Capisi comes back as a senior, one of the three guys that decided to come back for another year at BYU. But, I mean, he's a walk-on. Is that what you're going to be starting? We'll see. I mean, who knows? I mean, we've seen crazier things at the safety spot. And Ed Lamb, he's going to have a different set of eyes in terms of that position group. So definitely I'm with you. I think that is a position that if you look across the board, it's the one that probably has the biggest question mark for 2021 as of right now.
And all I'm looking for is – I'm not looking for Ed Lamb or Elisa Tuiaki to come out and say, these guys are the guys. They've established themselves. Because I know we've got a long way to go, as you mentioned. But it would be reassuring to hear some individuals who put in the work in winter conditioning and who have been impressing in spring football. Because we've seen some clips like – D'Angelo Mandel looks legit at the cornerback position just from those clips we've seen. He's making plays. Micah Harper, another guy. Like, that cornerback position I'm feeling great about. But safety, we're not seeing a lot. We're not hearing a lot. And so hopefully by the end of spring, Mitch, there's a couple names that stick out to the coaching staff. That would make me feel a little bit better going into summer conditioning.
Well, and I think that with this cornerback room, maybe they get to a point, too, where they're having so many guys have success there. Maybe you switch them to safety. That's what Malik Moore did. He originally started out as a cornerback. Then he switched over to safety. So that could be a possibility, too. Yeah, Troy Warner as well. Caleb Christensen's kind of that nickel guy, too. He could go into that safety spot. So there's some versatility, and I think that's been a theme with what Kalani Sitake and Tuiaki have done with this defensive personnel, is that you got a bunch of guys that could play literally four or five different positions within this defense. So I think it'll sort itself out. But, yeah, as of right now, that's definitely, to me, a little bit of a question mark for this BYU team, especially when you think about BYU safety. They've always had, like, one alpha in that room, where you think about, like, an Andrew Rich. You think about a Troy Warner. There's always just been one go-to guy that's kind of like the back end, the quarterback in the back end of the defense. Daniel Sorensen types. Yeah, BYU's always just had that one star at that position, and you hope to see that emerge again, because that's just an important spot in the back end of that defense.
And Mitch, again, you know, we don't get to see hardly anything, so I could be off in left field when I say this, but I have always felt this way. I feel like there's a guy or two, maybe at linebacker, that could slide over, like a la Zane Anderson, guys who have played in high school, so there maybe the learning curve wouldn't be that steep. Drew Jensen is a guy to me who I just feel like, could that dude shed a couple pounds and be a missing link? Because we know he can tackle, and we saw him late in the season make an interception, so he can cover too. I don't want the aggregators to come get me and say I'm saying this dude's switching positions, but that's just a dude when I look at the roster where I'm like, could this guy be a safety, Drew Jensen?
Yeah, I think he could. I mean, he played it at Brighton High School. And remember, too, Chaz Allu played a lot of safety when he was coming up at Westlake and then ultimately Tempview. So I think this will work itself out for BYU. And I think, too, you know, the defensive line position is going to be a spot that's interesting. And Tuiaki mentioned how there's a lot of bodies there. Curious to see who rises to the top. I'm pretty confident that the defensive ends are going to be Tyler Batty and Lopa Uriah Leotau. I think those are your two stars, barring any sort of injuries, and both of those guys have had their share of injuries. Leotawa, I mean, back injuries. He had the devastating leg injury last year that really derailed him after where he was playing some great football in fall camp. So if they can stay healthy, I think those are your two guys on the edges. But, you know, who steps in for Kyrus Tonga? I think there's some capable bodies in Atunai Samahe and Caden Haas. So, you know, that's where this time of the year, it's great to evaluate, kind of get a feel for where guys are at physically, and see how much progress they've made and the commitment levels that they're making. I mean, is this BYU program just kind of sitting back and going, hey, we've arrived? I don't get that feeling, man. No. I feel like they're looking at this as another chance to prove the doubters wrong and say, hey, this was just not a one-year fluke. We're ready to do a lot more. And I think that's kind of the vibe I'm getting from this team. It's a good spot to be in.
We'll keep talking spring football on the other side. We got to take a break. And I'm curious, Mitch, which position group maybe leading into spring football you had some concerns, some questions about. And now after a week, you're like, hey, this group's in a lot better position than I thought. So we'll get to that next year as we continue talking football here on Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio. Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. If you want to interact with us during the show, feel free to text us at the UCCU KSL text line at 57500. And also, if you want to be part of our special BYU text group, text BYU to 57500. You can get updates on the Cougars via text, in-game updates, all the good stuff coming to you from KSLSports.com and here on KSL News Radio. Matt, there's only, I typed this up and looked it up, 182 days till September 4th. It feels a little more manageable than like 230 or anything like that. Like, 182, we're not far away. We're about 6 months till BYU kicks it off against Arizona. And right now, BYU football is in action with spring ball. They just concluded week one. And the program, I think there's a sense of optimism about what they're trying to accomplish. Yes, the quarterback position is the big talking point in spring, but there's a lot of good storylines, I think, potentially emerging out of spring football right now. What's some of the stuff that's been catching your eye?
I think, to me, Mitch, one of the biggest, not surprises, but just pleasant surprise, I guess, is just I feel so good about the skill positions, wide receivers and cornerbacks. And look, I know that we are only able to see certain clips, and those are selected, you know. So we're getting less than 5% of what goes on at practice. But I've seen Isaiah Heron make some plays. I've seen D'Angelo Mandel make some plays. Micah Harper making plays. I feel like it's going to go well for this defense to replace Chris Wilcox and some of those experienced guys that you've had. I feel really comfortable about that. It's been nice to see them making plays against the offense. And then that wide receiver room, I felt this way last year, but I think it's just a continuation of what we've seen at the end of last season. Neil Pau, he may not be the number one, but he is a dang good number two. I've been really impressed with Neil Pau's play from what I've seen. So I just feel really good about both of those positions.
Yeah, wide receiver is a spot where I'm coming away feeling pretty confident about this group. I mean, you lose Dax Milne, you're asking yourself who's going to be that wide receiver one, and I think that's still going to be, you know, two to be determined. I think all indications would point that it's going to be Gunnar Romney, but still, he's got to show that. I think he was a nice wide receiver too, a complimentary guy to Dax Milne, but can he be the top target? That's going to be something that's interesting to watch, but I've liked what I've seen in some of the footage from Chris Jackson. And Jackson was someone who was a junior college transfer who I thought last year was going to make an impact. You know, and he had, sadly, I think his most memorable play of last season was against Coastal Carolina, where he ran 20 yards behind the line of scrimmage or whatever it was. It was a costly play, but still, I think that, you know, he's sticking true with BYU and all in on the BYU experience and just kind of keeping that positive attitude. And I think that he's someone that I think he's going to have an impact this year, and I think Cody Epps will be someone as well. A little bit nicked up right now. You'll hear from Cody coming up in hour number three. About 2:05, we'll have BYU freshman Cody Epps on the program, who I think he could be that third wide receiver with Neil Pau and Gunnar Romney. But, you know, Keanu Hill is another nice target. Point. I mean, he reminds me in terms of his physical makeup and frame, kind of like a Cody Hoffman, just the size, and he's got the lineage where his dad played in the NFL. His uncle is Roy Williams, who was a great at the Texas Longhorns and played for the Dallas Cowboys. So there's some good talent. And then you bring in Chase Roberts this fall, who might be the most talented guy, the most heralded prospect in the room. He's coming back from a mission, who just got back this week. So, yeah, I'm with you, Matt, 100%. That wide receiver group is going to get better. And I also have a ton of trust in Fessy Satake. What he's done with that room – since he stepped into the program in 2018, they've done a great job, because that position, I had some serious questions about the direction of the wide receiver position under Kalani Sitake after the first couple of years. But then Fessy came in, and it's been a night and day difference. And you know that they're going to maximize the potential out of that room for sure.
And I think, too, to piggyback off what you just said about Coach Sitake with the wide receivers, you have Micah Simon seemingly comes out of nowhere to have a fantastic season. So you talk about the development there. And then no one thought Dax Millen was going to do what he did. No one in their right mind thought he was going to declare early. And now we've seen reports that he's had multiple Zoom calls with the Niners, the Patriots, amongst others in the NFL. He's looking like he's got a good chance to get drafted. At very least, he's going to have a great chance to make a roster. No one would have thought that. So who's going to be that guy this year? We talk about Neal. We talk about Gunner. I think there's another guy that we don't know yet who's going to pop up because Fessy's done such a great job developing these guys.
Yeah, maybe it could be a Braden Cosper who played on the same high school team as Dax Millen, and oddly enough was the higher rated recruit. He was the one getting the scholarship offer, whereas Dax Millen was the preferred walk on. So yeah, there's definitely options, and it's a nice luxury for these quarterbacks that whoever ends up being the full time starter, they're going to have weapons around them. They're going to have some talented wide receivers. I wouldn't say they're, you know, maybe top shelf NFL talents yet. Maybe they could be. But, you know, then they got great tight ends. Isaac Rex, that guy's going to be one of the best tight ends in college football this year. I have no worries about saying that. He has got, you know, the potential to be one of the best tight ends in this program's history. He could be a Mackey Award finalist. He's that good. He should have probably been in the conversation last year with the type of production that he had, having more than, 12 touchdown grabs a season ago. Isaac Rex is fantastic. And then you bring in Dallin Holker and Hank Tuipulotu, who's getting finally healthy. So there's good things happening for the pass catchers for BYU. So, yeah, I think that is a great storyline that's emerging from this group. And I also like, too, the offensive line. I think that, you know, I was kind of just jotting down going into the show today what would be maybe my envision, how I see the offensive line starting against Arizona 6 months from now. And I would say Blake Freeland at left tackle, left guard Keanu Saliapaga, center James Empey, right guard Connor Pay, and then right tackle either Harris LeChance or Campbell Barrington. That's a pretty good old line. Those are some big, huge bodies that are physical at the point of contact. I think that this offensive line is going to be pretty good and surprise a lot of folks as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of good things happening. And the personnel and the depth, it's showing itself because BYU lost so many quality players, yet it feels like there's capable guys ready to step in and take their game to the next level.
And that's what's so interesting about this is they've lost so much production. I'm sure you've seen the graphic where they're one of the bottom teams in terms of just returning production from a year ago. But something that brings me comfort about that is you've got a couple guys like Tyler Allgeier and Lopini. Those guys produced. You know what they are. But last year we wondered, oh no, Matt Bushman gets hurt. Where's the production going to come from?
Right.
No one would have thought Isaac Rex did what he did. And he did it. So this program has proven that even though you lose that production, there's guys in the wings who can take over. We've seen it before. We wanted the same thing with the wide receivers. We were like, is this group going to be good enough? Well, they surpassed 2 years ago when we thought Simon and Shumway and those guys played great football. So I'm with you. I'm not worried about the lack of returning production at all.
Yeah, I think it's a good problem to have right now for BYU, all the competition that's taking place in the program. Spring football will continue week two starting up on Monday. It's going to conclude around March 26th, so it's just going to go this entire month in March for spring football going to take place, and you can get all the coverage on KSLSports.com and the KSL Sports app. Got to take a break, though. On the other side, we'll be joined by BYU basketball assistant Cody Figger here on the program. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back into Cougar Sports Saturday here on KSL News Radio, your legacy home of the BYU Cougars. Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte here, and it's the first show in the month of March, and you know, when March hits, it's a special time of the year. It's NCAA tournaments, conference tournaments. It's a great time for basketball fans, and after having it taken away last year, we're so glad to have it back this year amidst the global pandemic. And to join us now to talk about the upcoming WCC tournament, we're joined by BYU basketball assistant coach Cody Feger on the program. Cody, welcome on into the show.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I appreciate you having me on here.
Yeah, so appreciative to have you on as well, and just so glad to be back here in March. And, you know, a year ago at this time, it felt like the WCC tournament was the last sign of normalcy. Matt and I were both out there in Vegas to watch you guys, and just to think of everything that's changed in the world today, you know, just kind of can you reflect on maybe what this past year has meant for you and where you guys have grown as a program the past year?
Yeah, so, I mean, it was, like you said, been a great year, but just kind of a long year. You know, we ended that WCC tournament on a loss, and the season just kind of ended, right? Just kind of like, what's the movie Avengers? It just kind of just went out into, it was like, not the end game, but what is it, where Thanos just snapped his fingers and poof, everything was gone. That's the way it felt. Is that
Infinity,
right?
Was it Infinity War?
Yeah, kind of Infinity War. And it just felt like everything was fine. And then we just lost everything, lost our season, lost everything. You know, it wasn't that bad, but yes, it sucked losing all that stuff. And then, you know, Jake, all those guys graduated, Yoli, TJ, you know, kind of went off and, you know, G League and different things like that. And then we need to start recruiting again. And that was done over Zoom. That's where the Zoom life came in. I'll tell you, I wish one thing I would have done is bought stock in Zoom. What, you know, last February, I'd be, you know, killing this thing right now. So that's one thing I wish I would have done and known before. After that, you know, we just hit recruiting really hard, like I said, with Zooming and talking to our players every single day, Alex Barcelo and, you know, Connor Harding, all the guys that were on the roster, Colby Lee, Richard Harwood, Wyatt Lowell, kind of, you know, went through the deal. And like I said, we worked hard to sign a couple guys and then, you know, we didn't know if we were going to have games. It was just kind of a weird, weird year. And then we got to November and we were able to play and we started off the non-conference 9-2, and that was really exciting. And we lost some games here and there, but we're what, 19-5, and really excited about this upcoming WCC tournament. I know that was kind of me talking for a long time, but you know, it was just a long year.
Love that summary, Coach. And now you're at a point where you're one of the hotter teams in college basketball. You're continuing to rise up the bracketology in terms of a potential seed. Why do you think this team has been able to kind of crescendo to this point in the season?
One thing that, you know, Coach Pope and, you know, kind of the whole staff and Alex Barcelo, the leader of this team, is just kind of want to stay fluid throughout the year, right? Like, we are not going to let anything make us respond in a specific, you know, we are going to stay the course, do what we do every day and think about getting better. And our team has just kind of bought that mentality and just thinking about that every single day. And that's kind of got us through this. Hey, we don't have a game against San Diego. Boom. You know, we just practice at San Diego and then get ready for Portland, you know, fly to Portland that night and get ready to play them. I mean, we've just stayed fluid throughout this whole thing and not let anything just bother us or bring us down. It's on to the next thing. Hey, we just got to figure out how to get better and win this next game. So, you know, our Coach Pope started with that. And then our team kind of all bought into it. Alex Barcelo, our leader, Matt Harms, Brandon Abert, all three of those guys have just been so willing and just wanting to get better and they just want to win, you know, so they took a huge chunk from what that team did last year for us with Jake, Yoli, TJ, Zach, Dalton, all those guys, and taking another step with that. I think we're playing well right now at the end of the year is just because that's all we've been focusing on as a team. You know, that's what these guys are excited about. I mean, it's March, you know, 5th today, and we had a great practice today to get ready for Monday.
Talk with BYU basketball assistant Cody Feger here on KSL News Radio, and you mentioned those three seniors with Averett, Barcelo, and Harms. Coach Pope's always talked about this, and your whole program's talked about it. Seniors are magical. What makes these three seniors so magical?
The thing that makes them so magical is all of them, I guess, who would have thought those three guys would end up at BYU at the end of the day, right? I mean, I think that's the part where I think about every day, like how lucky I am to coach Alex Barcelo, Brandon Averett, and Matt Harms here at BYU. And what makes them special is, you know, Alex came from a winning program at, you know, Arizona, really good program. Matt Harms also. And Brandon Averett, this is his third program. Oklahoma State, they won. You know, he was the starting guard on a top 40 team. And then was at UVU and then came here. And those three guys have just only wanted to win and get better. And that's just trickling down to everybody else. And I think just their path to get here and how coachable they are. And you know, everybody on the team just loves all three of those guys. And they've just been such great leaders and great people here.
Those guys, plus some other signees and freshmen, you guys have played a different style of basketball than what we saw last season. When I say you, I'm referring to the coaches and the players here, but what are you guys most proud of in terms of the way you guys have been able to shift your identity from one year to another?
I mean, that's the thing that, you know, Coach Pope, his mantra is the same thing, right? I mean, I can talk about the same stuff every day, is getting better every day, and how, you know, how we respond is, we can't be the same exact team as last year. I mean, we had 1 through 5. Those guys could pass, shoot, you know, everything. And this team has a Matt Harms, who we have to play ball screen defense a different way and this and that. So we had to shift a lot of things defensively. We've never been a down team pushing away from ball screens. And that's all we've been, just to force them into Matt. And then the other thing is offensively, we've got guys that are really good on the block, that are good down there, and then really good offensive rebounders. Like last year, we were one of the worst offensive rebounding teams in the country. And this year, we're one of the top ones. And then shooting has always been a thing that, you know, we're top 30 in the country now, top 35. Last year, we were number one. So we just had to adjust on kind of what shots we're taking. And it took us a second to figure out the best way to help this team make shots too. And we've done that way better in the last 10 games.
All right, Cody, we got to take a break here on Cougar Sports Saturday. We'd love to have you on the other side. So if you can hang tight, we'll take a break here, and then we'll be back with Cody Feger, an assistant coach down at BYU, to talk some more BYU hoops after this. So stay with us. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
Cody Feger's our guest here on KSL, and when you talk about shifting things, I imagine you guys want to shift, have a different outcome this year in the WCC tournament. That Monday night spot is, I think it's kind of underrated how tricky that is for a program like BYU, where you guys don't practice on a Sunday. You're the last team to touch the floor in Vegas in the whole entire tournament. What's maybe going to change with the approach and how you guys are going to get ready for this Monday night tilt compared to last year, where you guys came up 1 point short?
Honestly, it's the same thing. We think about this stuff relentlessly all day, every day, on what could we have done better last year for that team? What did that team need last year? And that's the same thing we're doing this year. So this year we're changing up a little bit. We're actually going to do a little 8:30. We can get in the gym at 8:30 Pacific time for an hour, and we're actually going to do some live stuff to kind of get our guys moving a little bit this year in the morning there. And then tomorrow, we are actually on Saturday, we're going to do an 9:30 in the morning practice here for an hour, and then we're going to come back late at night at 8:30 at night and do another little hour practice. So we're going to make it try to feel exactly like the game and do exactly what we're going to do so our guys will see it and feel it, and we'll be ready to go Monday night.
What makes senior guard Alex Barcelo such a good leader? We hear that term so often. He's the leader of the team. He's a great leader. Why? What makes him a great leader?
Alex Barcelo. So as soon as he was, as soon as those guys graduated and were done, Alex was like, I want to lead this team. I want to be that guy. And everybody leads differently. Right. Everybody kind of leads differently. You know, Michael Jordan led this way. Kobe led this way. LeBron leads this way. Alex Barcelo, how he leads is what he wanted is he wanted to contact these guys every single day. So he's sending text messages. He's the first one in the gym. He's the last one in the gym to leave. He's sending these guys quotes. He's the guy that brings everybody in at all times. It's not like he's the guy that's yelling at everybody every single day, but he's the guy that sets the tone every single day. And he's wanted it, and this has kind of been his dream, and he's so happy. This is exactly where he wants to be at this moment, and that's another reason why our guys are playing so well down the stretches. He's leading them because he still has all that left in the tank, and it's been phenomenal to watch.
You know, with the month being here at March and tournament season and all of that, Coach Feger, what changes for the fan that's listening out there? They always hear, you know, wait till postseason. It's a different game, especially here in the NBA when you hear the Utah Jazz are atop the standings. And then they're like, well, you know, wait till the postseason. It's a different game. What changes at the college game in the postseason? Is it, you know, the style of play? Like, what for our listeners, What change from your vantage point have you seen in postseason basketball?
So the best way I can think of postseason, and actually I was actually thinking about this today, so it's funny that you asked, but I was like, how can I describe this to some of our guys today? Is these guys are in college, right? And the next day, you know, you're able to come back to practice or do this and that. Well, when you take a step and you're professional, that can be over at any moment. You can get cut. You can get dropped. You don't do this. You don't do that. You're done. Right. And so that's playoff time. Like all these guys are going for somebody else's plate, you know, somebody else's food, like trying to take food off that guy's table and this and that. And that's exactly what postseason is no one cares. Everyone's throwing everything out and, you know, Pepperdine or you name it, they are going to try to beat us because they want to keep on playing and they want to make a name for themselves. And that's the only thing they're thinking about. Like the guy at Colby Ross, he's playing for a contract, you know, and that's what makes it so much harder because everyone just puts every ounce of effort into winning these games because everybody wants to, you know, kind of make a name for themselves. And that's where it is. It's just everyone's going so much harder.
Coach, what are the keys in the coaching staff's opinion for BYU to go on a run in the NCAA tournament? What do you guys have to do well to achieve those goals?
Yep. So the main things that we've been focusing on the last month or so, and we talk about it every day as a staff and we talk about it every day as a team, is number one is our physicality and toughness. Like, we want Matt Harnes, Alex Barcelo, those guys, Brent Neighbor, those guys setting the tone with physicality, whether it's a rebound, whether it's a screen, whether, you know, it's getting a catch, everything with physicality. And then the next thing is communication at all times. We want all guys talking. So we're doing a ton of different drills with communication that makes everybody talk on every single possession. And the third thing is protecting this ball. And, you know, we just talk about different things that we help our guys protect the ball, whether that's play faster, play with more pace. The other thing is we talk about either getting to a jump stop when we're dribbling or keep our dribble alive, you know, not just jump in the air and throw a pass. Those are just a couple of things that we're working on, those three main points right now to help our team grow. And we feel like if we can do those three things, that we got a chance to play for a while here in March.
That is BYU assistant coach Cody Feger, And we appreciate his time as the BYU basketball team. They'll practice tonight here in Provo. Tomorrow they will jet down to Vegas. And as you heard Cody say, Monday morning very early, they'll get a chance to walk the Orleans floor, get a little workout in, and then they've got that late 10 p.m. Mountain Standard Time tip. It's going to be a challenge. They still don't know who they're going to play. If you had to guess, Mitch, who do you think BYU will play in that game Monday night? I think it's going to be Pepperdine. And I think that it's a great opportunity for BYU, too, because Pepperdine is a team that beat BYU. They're one of the few teams in the WCC that did indeed beat BYU. So you've got a chance to avenge that loss in Malibu against Pepperdine, and then you've got an opportunity to play possibly and probably Gonzaga on Tuesday. And the thing that I love about potentially playing Gonzaga, because let's be real, I don't want this tournament to happen. I never did. I just didn't think in a pandemic day and age that it was worth playing a conference tournament. Get these guys to the thing that matters. But what I do like about playing Gonzaga, and you brought this up in hour number one, Mitch, is there's no better team in college basketball. So win or loss, that's unbelievable preparation for the NCAA tournament.
It really would be, and I think that it's an opportunity. Again, we're maybe putting the cart before the horse, if you will, because they got to get by Monday. And right. if they play Pepperdine, you know Mark Pope's going to be losing sleep going up against Pepperdine, because that team gives BYU headaches with Colby Ross and Kessler Edwards. If they play Santa Clara, that'll be unique because it's a team they haven't played the entire year, and they meet up in the conference tournament. Kind of strange deal there. But I think that if they play Gonzaga on Tuesday, which it should be those two teams on Championship Tuesday, they're far away the best teams in this conference. I think, yeah, it would be a good opportunity for BYU to potentially improve their seed line too, because you see today Joe Lenardi's got him at 7, the 7th seed, and maybe if a few teams lose and maybe BYU can move up to a 6 if they beat Gonzaga. I mean, if they beat
Gonzaga,
that would
be an outrage.
They should be a 5.
Yes, thank you. I was just going to say, if you beat Gonzaga, you beat the greatest team in the history of the planet, in your opinion, Mitch. They better be more than one seed.
Yeah, they should be at least a 5. I mean, honestly, it's funny how, you know, BYU's in the net rankings, what are they, about 20, 21, somewhere in there. I got to check today. But it's like, oh, they're projected as a 7 or an 8. Like, what? Why can the net rankings not be a barometer of like, hey, that you know, top 20, they should be what, a 5? Like,
right.
I mean, I don't know, but
21's a 6. Yeah. Or well, yeah, but
I know it's tricky. I know it's tricky with BYU, and they have limited options.
It's
because
not
of
that
the Sunday
tricky, Mitch.
Role.
Don't give the committee any more ammunition to bump them down a couple lines.
No,
it's not that hard.
I'm using their angles here, like, oh, they got the Sunday play and this and that. But, you know, I think that if they play Gonzaga, though, I hope that it's not like a blowout. Because I remember there was a WCC championship where Gonzaga just blew BYU out. I think it was the year with Heath Schroyer a couple years back where BYU won 24 games. Get to that game, play competitive. And I think that would serve you well going into the March Madness, where it's like, hey, we just played the number one team in the country, gave it our all, or maybe won the game. You can hang with anyone. So I think that would be – that's the positive. You hope that opportunity poses itself coming up on Tuesday night.
We got to get to a break here at the midway point of Cougar Sports Saturday. On the other side, the ultra-competitive top five.
Yes.
We'll get to that, one of our favorite segments, always a good time. We'll do that next here on the program. So stay with us. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Touchdown! Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for 3! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports.
KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Welcome back into the show. KSL News Time, 1:35 p.m. on this Saturday afternoon. BYU Basketball WCC Tournament coming up on Monday night. Spring football. We've covered a lot. Big thanks to BYU basketball assistant Cody Feger for joining the program in the previous segment. But now we got to get to the top five.
The Cougar Sports Saturday Top 5. Mitch and Matt clash in a weekly battle of BYU sports knowledge. The Cougar Sports Saturday Top 5.
Yeah, it's the Top 5, always brought to you by Economic Partners, Utah's premier business evaluation and strategic consulting firm. If you need a business valuation, contact econpartners.com today. They're BYU MBAs, they're BYU fans. Got to do right by the Cougar Nation, right? Contact econpartners.com today. Let's bring in our producer and the maestro of the Top 5, Dallin Graff. Dallin, what's on deck for today's Top 5 this week?
Well, you know, it's actually a topic you've already mentioned. We're talking about spring football.
Oh.
You know, and the production, the loss of production. One of the big things that stuck out to me and something I've been thinking about for the last week is how do you replace the production of wide receiver and specifically losing Dax Milne, who had an incredible season last year. And the first guy that comes to mind is Gunnar Romney, right? And if you look at the beginning of his season last year, against Navy, 134 yards. Against Troy, 138 yards. Louisiana Tech, 101 yards. He was off to a really hot start, missed a couple games, had some injuries, and that really sort of slowed him down towards the end of the season. But he was really on a very strong pace. And I think coming into next season fully healthy, he's going to be a big player. If he does have the big season I expect him to, he might end up towards the top of the career receiving yards list at BYU, and that is today's top five, the top five in career receiving yards at BYU. All you got to do is name the player, and we'll go from there. Any questions before we begin?
Nope.
It seems simple enough. Yeah.
All right, we're going to start with Mitch this week. Mitch, what's your first guess here?
Let's go with Cody Hoffman.
Yes, you started at the top. Well done. Cody Hoffman is the leader in career receiving yards at BYU, 3,612 yards. And when you talk about Cody Hoffman, I think the one thing that sticks out is that monster 2012 season. 100 receptions, 1,248 yards, and 11 touchdowns as a junior. He was truly, really incredible. And throughout his career, very consistent, had at least 40 receptions and 500 yards in every season that he played and contributed every year. And that, you know, that's how you rack up those kind of yards.
And no offense to our dear friend of the program, Riley Nelson, but imagine if he had played with a guy like Zach Wilson, you know? So, I mean, Riley, tip of your cap to Riley. What I loved about Riley is he went to Cody repeatedly. He knew that Cody was the guy, double teamed. I don't care. I'm throwing to Cody, but it's no surprise, Mitch, that that era of BYU football was not known for its quarterback play.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable what Cody Hoffman did. I mean, in his only other offer coming out of high school was Sacramento State, and it was like, what? This guy became the best receiver statistically in BYU football history. Pretty impressive stuff.
No doubt. All right, Matt, to you.
I'm going to go with a wide receiver that cut his career a year short, like Dax Milne. And that's Austin Colley.
All right. Number two on the list, Austin Colley, 3,225 yards at BYU. All three of his seasons, he had at least 40 receptions and 700 yards. His best season, 2008, we're talking 88 receptions, 1,339 yards, and 15 touchdown receptions.
Excuse me? Did I hear those numbers?
That is insane. I mean, the single season, that's the greatest. As far as receiving yards, that's the biggest anyone's ever had at BYU. So he has that single season record and just behind Hoffman by a couple hundred yards in the career receiving yards. If he comes back the senior year, no doubt, you know, barring any injuries, he would have passed him. That's how incredible he was in just three seasons.
You know what's remarkable, too? It's like he served a mission. And he just comes back from his mission, Mitch, and it was like he never left. I mean, you just don't see that often from return missionaries where it was just like, yeah, I'll just shake off these 2 years and continue dominating.
Yeah, Austin Colley, is it fair to say he's the greatest of all time wide receiver?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say.
I mean, he was the man. Like, he was so good at BYU. And then that fit in the NFL, like him going to the Indianapolis Colts, you're like, oh, you're kind of sad that he was going in the fourth round because you thought, oh, he's better than that. He deserves to be in the second or third, but what a perfect fit. Him and Peyton Manning was a great match. It's just sadly the injuries and the concussions you know, derailed what was going to be, I thought, a heck of an NFL career too. Austin Collie was stud. I mean, just every bit as good as maybe you remember, and then some. He was the man at BYU.
No doubt. All right, Mitch, back to you.
Let's go with Dennis Pitta.
Yes, that great pull. The lone tight end on the list.
Very interesting.
Hint, hint. Yes, Dennis Pitta, 2,901 yards. Again, he was same sort of situation, right? Had a year, went on a mission, came back, played three more seasons, and just, you know, incredibly consistent. Three seasons with 800 plus yards. His biggest in 2008 alongside Austin Collie. He had 83 receptions, over 1,000 yards and six touchdowns. And getting that sort of production next to a true number one wide receiver, a guy getting targeted that much, just shows how good Pitta was, that you could not get him the ball as well. You had to get him his touches, and he surely did.
Yeah, it's special, too, to think two of these three guys that we've talked about already, they were just lightly recruited guys. Because I think, you know, I know myself personally, I love the recruiting rankings, and I love the star system and what it means, because I feel like it's almost becoming as accurate as possibly can be. I mean, there's just so much talent in those stars, but there's guys like Dennis Pitta, who was a preferred walk-on, like Dax Milne, and Gary Croton goes out to Moore Park and does a tryout with this dude. He's like, we got to get this guy, and he becomes an all-timer, and what, just a fantastic football player. And like Austin Collie, he would have probably played in the NFL a lot longer had it not been for injuries. So, and he became a Super Bowl champion, and just, man, he was so automatic. I think back to that Oklahoma game in 2009. What was it, a 4th-and-2?
Yep.
He, over the middle, he just automatic, moving the sticks, great player, just great hands. Dennis Pitta, man, he was something special. And it felt like for the longest time, Matt, BYU fans were saying, what's going to happen with the tight end position? When are we getting that back? When are we going to have the next Dennis Pitta? Well, luckily now, it's been a position that's been revived under Kalani Sitake, but there was some years there where the tight ends were not utilized as much as they once were with Dennis Pitta.
I will add to that, though. I think there's still an opportunity for Aaron Roderick to utilize the tight ends more, like Dennis Pitta was, where Isaac Rex and Mac Bushman, they were big play guys, but I don't know if they were utilized enough in the short game. You referenced that 4th-and-2, 4th-and-3. I'd love to see Isaac Rex. His touchdowns are coming down. I'm sorry, guys. He's not getting 12. But if his receptions could be plus 55, I would love that. You know, 3rd-and-4, boom, 5-yard out to Isaac Rex. I just want to see some more short game possession type plays like we saw so often with Dennis. It was almost automatic with Dennis, where it's like, oh, you need 5 yards, ding, Dennis Pitta. I love that. Yeah, so I'd love to see that come back.
Great point. All right, we're 3 for 3 so far. Let's see where we go from here. Matt, what do you got?
Well, you did save me from a miss, because I was going to go with the tight end. So now I'm really scratching my brain, and I'm going to go with Curtis Brown, running back. Ouch.
All right. I'm going to go with, I think I've got it locked up. He's a dear friend on my Facebook page. I see his timeline. I see his work all the time, all the Facebook statuses. Eric Drage.
Nice.
There we go.
Yes, well done. Eric Drage, and you know, didn't have the splashy season that some of these other players had, but was just incredibly consistent. Back-to-back 1,000-yard receiving seasons in 1991 and 1992. 10-plus touchdown receptions in both of those seasons as well. And then three straight seasons with at least 50 receptions and 900 yards. So, you know, that racks up to over 3,000. He had 3,065 yards total in his career. And again, just really a consistent receiver for BYU when they needed it.
Yeah, and Drage was just like, so automatic, and he's just like tough too. Like, he, you know, another under the radar guy, wasn't thought of much when he arrived at BYU, but he was Ty Detmer's go-to guy, and he had one of the best individual plays in the history of BYU football. He had a 97-yard touchdown against Utah. Think about that. Like, how crazy would that be, seeing BYU pop off some 97-yard touchdown grab against the Utes? It's almost like, does that even happen anymore? Does BYU score with ease ever against Utah anymore? Yeah, Eric Drage was a tough football player, and you think, like, he kind of reminds me of, like, just the BYU receivers back in that day, where they just had the automatic hands, tough as nails, and they just ran their routes to a T. Like, they just knew where to go. The defenses knew what was coming, but they still couldn't stop it. And Eric Drage was a dang good football player in that BYU offense that was obviously led by Ty Detmer.
Yeah, and I think that type of player, you know, when you think of Drage and, like, Ben Cahoon, and I think even Dax Milne fits in there. BYU receivers have got to be craftsmen of route running and catching the football, and I think so far under Fessy Satake's tutelage, that's what we're getting from this current crop of wide receivers.
No doubt.
Oddly enough, I kind of put Dax Milne a little bit more with Austin Colley type. Just kind of my opinion.
Interesting. I know that he took the lid off with a lot of deep plays, but I still view him as just a precise, route-running, sure-handed type of receiver. Yeah. Austin Colley was in a league of his own.
Yeah, that's fair.
No doubt. All right, so Mitch gets the win, but we have one more on here. Matt, do you want to take a shot at guessing who you think this is?
Mitch Matthews?
How about Glenn Kozlowski? Okay.
Oh, geez. Man.
Get a couple more guesses if you want.
Woo, okay. It's obvious. Harvey Unga?
That's a good guess. I would have thought that he's probably in the mix, like top 10, I would imagine. I'm going to throw this thing back. Old school. Let's go with Jay Miller. Okay.
Nice.
That was like late 60s,
early
70s.
There's a guy that played with Detmer. I'm struggling to... Bellini!
Ooh, yeah.
It's a good guess. Bellini is sixth, by the way.
Yeah. How about this? I want to say he grew up out in West Valley, so my neck of the woods growing up.
Oh.
It was called Hunter back in those days when he was playing youth baseball with my dad. Andy Boyce. Okay.
Another solid guess. It is Margin Hooks.
Oh,
jeez.
Margin, we're sorry. We're sorry.
He is going to blast my DM.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Blast us. We deserve it.
And that 1999 season, 62 receptions, 1,136 yards, 7 touchdowns. Big time. And again, a consistent guy throughout his career at BYU.
You know, that's kind of interesting because, and I do this all the time, I feel like Margin Hooks is far too often overlooked. But yeah, when you put the numbers there, he's top five. He was in the NFL for a little bit, I think a year with the Miami Dolphins, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, I think, too, if memory serves me right. But yeah, he's kind of like a forgotten guy a little bit because it was those years after 1996 where the quarterback play was okay. Kevin Federick was good. I mean, he was solid. You put his numbers up against many other programs, he'd be one of the best ever. But it was just still like no one ever says their favorite quarterback was Kevin Federick. You know, they were Paul Shoemaker or Drew Miller. You know, Margin Hooks, so kind of like in that same cut from Cody Hoffman. Quarterback issues, but still put up big numbers. And he wore some awful jerseys, too. Those bibs were horrendous, but still cool. Now, 20 years later, you look back at him and go, you know, it was kind of cool. I can't believe we forgot Margin Hooks. He is going to be very upset with us.
Well, Mitch, congrats on the win this week on the top five.
Thank you.
Well done, guys. Good guessing this week. We're improving. We're getting better.
Yes.
Well done.
Yeah, the guess, like, I will never forget Nathan Call, the all-time three-point leader ever again. It's been inundated in my mind from a few weeks ago.
Parting words from you, Mitch, on our way out?
You know, obviously that happy with the victory, first off. And, you know, the receiving room, I think that BYU potentially has another guy maybe that could be in that mix. I think Isaac Rex, or in the tight end room as well, Isaac Rex could be that guy that knocks on the door of being in that top five, definitely top 10 conversation by the end of his career. Because you think about it, he's going into a season where if he wanted to, he could still be a redshirt freshman this upcoming season. He's got all this, you know, valuable time in the program already. Probably, you know, going to be still a sophomore internally. He's going to, you know, consider himself that way. But if he wanted, he could play another 4 years at BYU. Crazy to think. So we could see some record books rewritten because of this extra year due to the pandemic. So we'll be interesting to see. But we appreciate our sponsor, Economic Partners, Utah's premier business evaluation and strategic consulting firm. Contact econpartners.com today. to get a business evaluation because, yeah, they're BYU MBAs, they're BYU fans. Hit up econpartners.com today.
All right, we got to get to a break. That was the top five. We'll be back with more to wrap up hour number two after this. Stay with us. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com. Welcome back in to Cougar Sports Saturday on a beautiful March, the first Saturday in March. It's wonderful to be turning the page. Mitch, I know it's not official, but it just feels like we're turning the page to spring, and I hate winter. This probably isn't the best place for me, but I hate winter. So anytime this time of year comes, it just adds a new, it's like I'm a new human being when good weather in March comes around. And then throw into that spring football, and then Mitch, throw into that an exclusive reveal by BYU football. Ooh. Earlier in the week. I mean, it can't get any better.
Let's go. Yes, those BYU football helmets were sweet. The satin navy blue, the satin royal blue, man, those are looking sharp. First time BYU has rolled out new colored helmet since 2012. So it's almost been a decade since BYU's done that. And they're going to have a royal blue and a navy blue helmet along with the white helmet. And if they ever want to bring it back, the black helmet. So BYU now suddenly got a lot of different options in the helmet game and looking pretty fresh. I got to say, BYU, they've got 26 different uniform options now. They're keeping up with the Joneses. I like what I'm seeing from these uniforms, Matt.
This is something we've been begging for a long time, and a lot of listeners here on Cougar Sports Saturday have disagreed with us. They just want to keep it basic. Can't do that in today's day and age. And tip of the cap to Billy Nixon and the BYU equipment staff for realizing that, hey, this is a part of the player experience. It's got to be fun, and the players will have a large say in which uniforms they wear. I think it's safe to assume, Mitch, that they will wear a different uniform combination every game this season, which I love. However, I still think there's room to go. So I think this is step one in what I would consider a successful rebrand, not the word, but a successful change into the new college football. So that's done. You've got the options. I love that. I think the next step, though, Mitch, is you've got to bring in alternate uniform or alternate logos to the helmets. I think that would be so easy once or twice a year to throw the Sailor Coug on or the Beat Digger. I think that would be awesome. And then I think the last piece that you need to just be in a perfect situation. And again, I don't want to take away from what was announced because it was a huge, momentous step. I loved it. But I still think you need to have one alternate, whether it's the black, whether it's something new in the mix as well. They did all of that, then I would never have another complaint. But this by itself is just huge news for BYU football.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I think that, you know, the players, when they saw Tyler Allgeier and Jaren Hall rolling into the team meeting room, they were hyped. Yep. So I think it kind of sheds light into this is what players want. And yep. I think, you know, Billy Nixon, the BYU equipment assistant director, you know, he was on Cougar Tracks with me, and he mentioned how Kalani talks about how every day in this era of the transfer portal, you have to recruit your players every single day. And doing stuff like this and just kind of showing them the love, like, hey, we hear you. We want you to have an awesome experience at BYU because, you know, we know that at BYU it can be tough. But, man, BYU is such a rewarding place. And give them the tools and give them all this cool swag to succeed and have the success. And it's just going to make life just a little bit better for these guys. I mean, whenever you get a new pair, fresh pair of shoes, you just get a little extra kick in yourself. I know I do. I'm
do
sure
they,
you do,
though? Because when they graduate, they sell them all on Instagram. So
well, yeah. But in the moment, when they're on those, when they're on that playing field, that is one of my favorite things, though. Like, it's the, if you want to say, like, the former BYU football player starter pack, you're going to grow a beard. You're going to unload all of your merch on Instagram, and you're going to probably sell it for a nice chunk of change. Like, some of these guys, especially the ones that are wearing the 2X, the 3X, because those sizes come in a premium. Man, they're making bank, man. They're like, man, you're pulling in about $2,000 there, right there. But, yeah, it's funny to see
all of that. But I love the new helmets. I think it's great. I think it's fun. And I just think it'll be a fun experience for the fans as well.
Absolutely. Could not agree more. And I think one of the surprises, too, was the all-Navy helmets. I think that's so divisive in the fan base. Royal, Navy. That Royal look with the Royal helmet, that I think it takes the Navy helmet takes it to another level.
Yeah, Navy's back. I think there's going to be a little bit of a revival. I think fans are going to be wanting some more Navy gear. Like, you know me, I love that Royal, but that Navy lid, that thing looks sharp.
Yes, it does. All right, we got to take a break here. News, traffic, and weather coming up next, and then we'll get to hour number three, Cody Epps, freshman wide receiver down at BYU. He'll join the program, and we'll preview the WCC tournament as well in hour number three. Stay with us. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougar Sports winning!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte.
On your legacy home of BYU Sports. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
KSL Sports and KSL News Radio, Mitch Harper here. BYU football enters the 2021 season, you know, looking to replace some wide receivers. Dax Milne, he's gone. Who could possibly replace him? A guy to keep an eye on potentially is freshman receiver Cody Epps, and he joins me now. Cody, thanks for joining me today.
Appreciate you. Thank you for the extending the offer from...
Yeah, thrilled to talk to you, man. You know, before we get into your time at BYU the past year or so, I want to throw it back to the days before you stepped foot in Provo, Los Angeles. What was life like for Cody Epps in the big city of L.A.?
Growing up in L.A. was pretty cool. I went to multiple schools in L.A., so I know a lot of people. I'm well connected within my city with people from different parks, from playing sports at a very young age. Ever since very young, I've been just, you know, playing sports, going to school, hanging with friends, you know. And for the most part, it's a big city to everyone else, but it's kind of a small city to me and my family because we've kind of been everywhere in L.A., so it's pretty cool. And it's good to get out and see some different stuff now that I'm in Utah.
Were sports a big part for your family growing up? Like you mentioned that you grew up playing a ton of sports. Are sports just kind of the part of the fabric of the Epps family?
Yes. So my dad played football at a very high level. My uncle played college basketball. I have another uncle that played baseball. My mom did ballet and dance. My grandma did tennis and basketball. So basically my whole family are athletes, and it's been instilled in me from a very young age from them.
When did football become the sport for you?
Honestly, man, I played basketball, baseball, soccer, and football since I was three. And I just toggled between all of them. But I think it really became serious for me around like eighth grade when my dad started really harping on the fundamentals and what's important, and me just, you know, sticking to football because it's something that I love and I thrive in. And the camaraderie with teammates, going to high school and playing youth ball, it's to me in football, it's so much greater than other sports because there's a sense of individuality when you play those other sports. When it comes to football, it's more team-based, and I think I love that the most about football. So about eighth grade is when I took it upon myself to play football.
And then shortly after eighth grade, again, talk with Cody Epps here on KSL News Radio and KSLSports.com. You go to high school at Modern Day High School, and for those of us who follow recruiting and high school football, we know the history of Modern Day. It's almost peerless out west in terms of the history and the success. How would you characterize your time at Modern Day High School?
It was honestly a blessing, man. It was an amazing experience for me being able to play for a legendary high school coach, Coach Bruce Rollinson, being able to play with a lot of smart guys. Of course, I played football at a very high level there, got a lot of D1 athletes, 5-star recruits, 4-star recruits. But the thing that I love most is being able to connect with the teachers that I have there, being able to know my principal and them know me on a first name basis, not just as a general student at the school, being able to
reach out and touch and be able to talk to many different students of the student body at that school was a total blessing for me. And then, of course, on the football field, man, each and every week you play top level competition. So being able to see that before I hit the college ground, being able to play against dudes that are going to play on Saturdays and hopefully Sundays for a lot of them as well. So it was just a total package experience for me, and I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, you guys were, what, back-to-back state champions, back-to-back national champions. I mean, not only were you competing to be the best locally, you were competing the best nationally. Do you feel like that helped elevate your play to become what you ended up being that senior year where you were an All-American?
Yes, definitely. The saying, birds of a feather flock together, that sticks a lot in my head when it comes to playing at a high level. Being at Modern Day and being able to compete against great dudes, it almost elevates your game because you strive to be just as good and better than the guys surrounded by you and the team and your opponents, the guy guarding you. So being able to, you know, play the level that I did, even locally, like as you said, makes a whole big difference because it basically expands your mind to how great you can actually be by watching the great players around you and getting coached up by some of the greatest coaches there is. And, I think that definitely helped me separate myself and be able to play at a high level in high school.
And you really broke out your senior year, had you were one of the best statistical receivers in high school football in 2019. But before, when you were like an underclassman, who were some of the guys in front of you at Modern Day that while you were a young guy, did any of those guys go on to play college football?
Yes. So we have a guy named CJ Parks. We have a guy named Amara St. Brown, Brew McCoy, Nico Remigio. Those are the four guys that I kind of looked up to in a sense of picking up every little piece of their game. Some of the things that I picked up from each one of them are, you know, Amara St. Brown, he's a dog. Like he wants the ball every play. He loves to compete. He loves to score. Brew McCoy is just, he goes to work. He brings his lunch pail to work every day. He's going to play tough. He's going to play hard. Nico Remigio, he's kind of the same as Amara in the sense of he's kind of a bulldog, really feisty, high-level competitor, and then CJ, he's just quick twitch. So those are things that I watched and really observed from them from being, you know, a freshman on up that I really loved and looked up to them for.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring up all those names. And for those that know college football well, they've heard all of them. And because it speaks to the type of talent you were around at Modern Day High School and probably took some time to get your opportunity to step into the spotlight. And the quarterback you had passing you the football that senior year, currently at Alabama, Bryce Young, you know, how did that season help you grow as a football player in 2019 and all the yards and production and the wins that you guys had?
I think the biggest part to me that helped me grow my production and be able to play at a high level that I did, it wasn't the Fridays going out there to play. It was the piece that people didn't get to see. It was learning from Taylor Kelly, my quarterback coach who formerly played at ASU. It was playing with Bryce, who's able to put a ball in any spot that you need him to. It's the things, the intangibles that I learned and picked up on, doing the extra work, going and throw a little more after practice, being able to focus on details when it came to film with my former coach, Coach Money, honing in on those little things really helped me excel. It wasn't just, you know, Friday comes, let's go ball out. No, it was more of the things that I really cared about, the attention to detail, all those particular things, and especially coming from my two wide receiver coaches, Coach Sydney and Coach Finn, really instilling in all of us as a group, as a core, just to focus on everything in a minute sense so that when the big plays happen, it's easier for us because we've already done the fundamentals and taken care of all the details.
Cody, we got to take a break here in Cougar Sports Saturday. We'd love to continue this conversation on the other side. So freshman wide receiver Cody Epps, he'll rejoin us after the break here on Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
Cody Epps is my guest here. How would you describe, Cody, how the recruiting process treated you and how did you end up at BYU?
Honestly, man, it was a blessing. The whole recruiting process, especially with BYU. I got a couple offers early on, but as soon as BYU came on board, man, they came like a train. Each one of the coaches were contacting me, letting me know that they really care for me. They really wanted me to be here and they really care for me as a person. Allowing them to come in my home and talk to me and my family was amazing because you really get a sense of genuine love from these guys. They're not guys that are just going to tell you things to blow smoke up you. They're going to really try to hit home and let you know that when you come here, it will be home by the connections, by the way that they treat me, all that type of stuff. So I was really blessed and I'm really pleased at the way that they conducted themselves during the recruitment with me.
And you mentioned connections. If I'm not mistaken, Cody, don't you have a connection to former BYU quarterback and QB coach John Beck?
Yes. So my quarterback coach in high school, Taylor Kelly, is I think they're co-workers for their business, 3DQB, yep. I think it is. They work together. So they kind of – Taylor Kelly connected me to John Beck, and ever since then, it just went on. Then I got connected to Zach Wilson and just being able to throw with him and the whole coaching staff, really, because John Beck has really good connections up here. So that was a blessing that I'm able to you see how small the world is when somebody knows you and you know them. And that, so just work like that for me.
You know, and you mentioned Zach Wilson. I remember last year in fall camp, both Zach and Kalani were mentioning how you were doing good things instantly in camp. But if I'm not mistaken, you had some injuries that maybe derailed your opportunities to potentially play. How would you describe what happened, you know, as far as the injuries and just the freshman season overall?
It was a little bit of a change, you know, from high school to college. It was a big change in the sense of game speed. It wasn't too fast for me, but I think I have to do, and I've been moving forward with this definitely. And Coach Festi always harps this, and I take care of this a lot now. You got to take care of your body, and had some soft tissue issues, but I think it was just, you know, trying to overwork and focus on trying to do too many things at once instead of, you know, taking care of my body. My body is it's what runs. So I think that's something that I picked up on and I learned, and something that I'm going to go forward with as getting wisdom from my teammates and coaches, just taking care of my body more now. So that's really what I took from that.
How motivating was it though to see, you know, you had a chance to learn and see this offense operate the way that it did last year, and now there's a guy named Dax Milne who's going on to the NFL. Just how maybe motivating was it, like, hey, you can be here at BYU and still get to the league and achieve whatever it is that you want to do?
Yes, it's extremely motivating, especially coming from the three guys that I got to watch and sit back and actually learn from last season. Dax Milne was an amazing player. He's kind of a quiet guy, but I text him off and on now just to check up and see how he's doing and just give me some tips on certain things. But, man, watching him literally just be a quiet guy, just come and just ball out every day, every single practice, every game, I really love that about him. And I love that he didn't care what the outsiders were thinking. He didn't care what DB was in front of him. He didn't care what receiver was touted to be better than him. He was just going to outwork everybody and come in with his lunch pail on Saturdays and just ball out. So I'm extremely motivated to, you know, touch his accolades and do the things that he did to help us win. And especially the guys that I have with me now, Neil Powell and Gunnar Romney, I really want to, you know, help them as best as I can to help our team get wins week in and week out.
So for fans that maybe haven't seen you, your high school film and highlights, we got to see a little bit of you last year. But are you more of an outside guy, a slot? I mean, where do you feel like you're at your best, or are you someone that can do it anywhere on the field?
I thrive on being able to be someone that can kind of do it anywhere on the field. I'm trying to learn. I'm trying to focus on right now just being the best player to help my team, being the best wide receiver to help my team, whether that's in the slot, whether that's on the outside, talking to Coach Festi. So I don't really say that I do inside or outside. I mean, I like to play receiver. So anywhere a receiver is on the field, that's what I want to do, and I definitely want to do it so that I can help my team win, whether it's a matchup, whether it's a defensive scheme, wherever I can be, just to make big plays so we can move the chains down the field.
I love that the NCAA allowed this number to be allowed on jerseys, but why number zero?
Man, I don't know. I'm going to be honest. I had a couple conversations with Coach Festi about it. He thought it would be a great number for me. My family definitely did. And I think it's pretty cool to be the first person to ever do it. And I just hope and just want to continue to put the work in, man, so I could leave a legacy behind this number, like some of the guys that we have here from the past. And that's probably, you know, the main reason why I chose the number zero, just to possibly leave a great legacy with this number for the next, you know, person coming behind me and the people coming behind them.
And talking about legacy, a few more moments here. Appreciate this, Cody. You know, do you know much about the history of BYU football and the legacy? Did you do much research when you were, you know, in that recruiting process, learning about the school?
Yes, definitely, man, definitely. And I think one of the biggest things that I think is overlooked when it comes to BYU is the legacy. Like, people forget about the great people that we had. And once I told people, like, I'm really interested in BYU and I'm going to BYU and I'm going to attend. That's the first thing that a lot of older people brought to my attention. Like, man, you guys got national championship. You guys got Heisman winner. So yeah, I definitely did my research. I haven't done enough, man, because it's a lot of dudes. I hear so many times I'm just talking to somebody at the grocery store or anything. Like, they tell me somebody played in the league 20 years that came from BYU. So I'll find out more and more. But I definitely picked up some of the big names, and especially someone like Steve Young.
How's spring ball gone so far for you?
Spring ball is going well. I'm trying to get back. I got a little little foot thing bothering me right now, but I'm getting back under my feet, just doing the mental aspect of the game. And as soon as I'm ready to go, I'll be ready to go. So I've just been, you know, a student of the game right now.
Last thing for you, Cody, you know, what's maybe some of the goals that you have personally and as a team offensively in 2021?
Some of the goals that I have personally is I really want to make plays, man. I love making plays. I love being able to move the chains for my teammates. I love being able to score and the feeling of coming back to the sideline with the camaraderie you have with your coach, your teammates. And just that's my main focus. My main goal is just to make plays no matter what it is for my team. Some team goals are, of course, everybody wants to go undefeated, man. But I think some team goals are just to build a brotherhood that nobody can break. As soon as we hit that field, we're together on the field together. Nothing can change us. No adversity can change us. And just be able to win our matchups and just flourish together. Be great as a unit, not just individually, but great as a unit, of course. And just continue to win so we can make a bigger and bigger name on a larger scale for our school, especially with the head of steam that we have coming from last season.
He's BYU freshman wide receiver Cody Epps, and appreciate all the time you spent with us today. Cody, get healthy and stay safe, and looking forward to you balling out in this BYU offense in 2021 and beyond.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you.
All right, he's Cody Epps here on KSL News Radio.
Good stuff there from Cody Epps, and man, Mitch, I really hope he can find his way onto the field in spring football. And there's certainly an opportunity to be had here in spring for somebody to get a step forward in the race to be the third and fourth wide receiver in this BYU offense. And right now, since we're not able to see Cody, and quite frankly, we're not able to see a whole lot, but seems like Chris Jackson might be that guy with a foot ahead in that wide receiver race.
Yeah, it does feel that way. And I think Epps will be interesting, though, because you know, his path to BYU, I mean, some of the influences that he had, Brew McCoy, Amon-Ra St. Brown, some of the best wide receivers that college football has had the past few years, those were the guys that were in front of him at modern day. So he's experienced high-level competition. He's willing to be patient. But I think you can sense that he wants to show his abilities this season for BYU fans. And, you know, whenever you get a heralded recruit, you want to see the rewards of said recruit instantly. It feels like BYU, the guys that are maybe the under-the-radar ones, they're the ones that pop off early, and the heralded guys, it kind of takes a little bit longer than expected. It's a weird thing at BYU, but I do think Cody Epps is going to be a talented player at BYU, and I think it could be as soon as this year, once he's fully healthy and ready to go. I expect some big things from Cody in his BYU career, just because I think, too, that BYU wants to distribute the football. They're going to be a team that's probably, in the ideal scenario, probably 60 pass, 40 run in terms of distribution. So there's a lot of passes they're going to go around to these receivers and these tight ends, and definitely I think Epps is going to be in that mix for BYU in 2021 and beyond.
And Aaron Roderick told us a few weeks ago, Mitch, that ability to throw the football downfield is going to go a long ways in determining who's going to be a starting quarterback. So there's certainly going to be opportunities for guys like Cody Epps, because I don't think the offensive strategy is going to change at all. I mean, there might be a little tweak here or there, but by and large, what we saw last year, and this was music to my ears. Can I just say, we've talked about this for so long. Last year was what we want BYU football to be in terms of an offensive approach. Does that mean you're going to have, you know, what was Zach's completion percentage on throws 30 yards or longer? Like 75%? Like,
yeah, it's
probably not going to be that, but just taking those repeated shots to guys, that's what I want. And that's what Aaron Roderick has said that this offense is going to do. And you got to have guys like Cody Epps
if you're going to do that kind of stuff. So there's going to be opportunities.
Yeah, there definitely is. And I think that, you know, this BYU offense, you bring up a good point that it feels like it's just kind of continuing on. Like they're not skipping a beat. And I think that's positive. I mean, yes, there's going to be some skips in the beat a little bit just because you lose a top five NFL draft pick, top two pick. You know, you're going to lose a top wide receiver. You're losing a consensus All-American. So there's some questions, of course. But I think the scheme, the play calling, the verbiage, the language of the playbook, it's all there from last year. And it's just kind of carrying over. And I think that's why when, you know, Jeff Grimes left for Baylor, it was met with, okay, like, you know, appreciate what Grimes did because he stepped into a BYU program that was down and out, one of the worst seasons in program history. But now it's back to some high levels of play, and it's going to continue that way with Aaron Roderick as the play caller, who's very comfortable being an OC. He's got a great working relationship with Kalani Sitake, and there's that trust. I mean, Kalani is going to give Aaron Roderick the autonomy to run this offense as he sees fit. He allowed him to make the Daryl Funk hire, so you're already seeing the signs that this is Aaron Roderick's offense, and he's going to make the executive decisions that need to happen, and I think that's the right move, and I think that BYU will have success. Maybe not to the level of 2020, just because you're seeing a tougher level of competition too, but it's going to be a good offense, and I think regardless of who the quarterback is, they will have some success.
News, traffic, and weather is coming up next. We got to take a break here on Cougar Sports Saturday. We'll continue talking football. We'll probably touch on the WCC tournament that's taking place right now, and then we'll continue Monday and Tuesday. We'll do all of that as we wrap up the show here. It's Cougar Sports Saturday, powered by KSLSports.com.
This is Cougar Sports Saturday. Cougar Sports Saturday.
A presentation of KSL Sports.
Got it for three! Cougars by 20!
Every Saturday, all year long. BYU Sports Talk by Cougar fans.
For Cougar fans.
It's Cougar Sports Saturday.
Here are your hosts, Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. On your legacy home of BYU Sports. KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Yeah, welcome back into the show. Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte here. KSL News Time, 2:35 PM here on this Saturday afternoon. Couple more days till BYU basketball is back in action on Monday night, 10 PM tip. So make sure to get a nap in after work and get ready to watch and listen to BYU basketball here on your legacy home of the Cougars, KSL News Radio. Pregame will start at 9 with tip-off from the Orleans Arena in Las Vegas at 10 o'clock. No fans in the Orleans, so it's going to be an unusual environment. Like, there's literally no one. At every BYU basketball game this year, there was at least some friends and family of the players and coaches. So there was about 100 or so fans. Then we obviously saw the last two home games. There was about 1,700, 2,000 fans at those games. There is no one at the Orleans Arena, so it'll make for a unique environment. Our poll question today focuses on the WCC tournament. If BYU wins the WCC Hoops tournament and takes down top-ranked Gonzaga, would this be the greatest moment in Cougar basketball history? 37% of you say absolutely. 63% say no way. Matt, have I swayed you at all to say it would be absolutely, or are you still sticking with no way?
I'm still sticking with no way. I'm with Texter 5135. He says it would be second to Danny Age sending us to the Elite Eight.
That's fair.
I've moved it up. Originally, I would have said it would be fourth in my book. I moved it up a little bit. You know what really persuaded me, though, was when Tyler Hawes was on, and we asked him, you know, does this conference tournament matter? Because in my mind, driving up here, I'm like, the conference tournament sucks. Like, it's not that fun anymore. It doesn't mean anything. It's all about the regular season. Because growing up, I loved the conference tournament, man. It was like a dream of mine. You buy that pass. You sit there all day. I mean, you and I, in a lot of ways, Mitch, it feels like we lived the same life growing up. We would go to the Thomas and Mack Center.
Sessions.
Yep. We'd sit there all day long. We're watching Wyoming and Air Force. We're degenerates sitting in Thomas and Mack watching
Barrel Man is... Barrel Man's to your right, and the snake from New Mexico's to your left. Like, this is great. I'm loving this.
I just don't feel that way about the WCC tournament. And so I had honestly formulated this opinion that the tournament didn't matter. And then Tyler Haas says, oh, yeah, winning the tournament's at the top of the list. That surprised me. I got to admit, that surprised me because you would expect getting to the March Madness tournament is up there, winning the conference, which I kind of always interpret that as winning it outright during the regular season. But Tyler Haas swayed me that the tournament matters still. So I'll pay attention with a little more interest than I had before the show began. But I think without fans, if this place had been full of fans, then maybe. But I can't let the best moment in basketball history happen with 20 people in the arena.
That's fair. I do think that this would be the top of the list just because, again, I think Gonzaga is the best in college basketball this year. Will they be in years to come? I mean, as long as Mark Few's there, Gonzaga is going to be one of the five best programs in college basketball. That's what it is now. Like, it's no longer can you just assume Kentucky's always going to be there, Duke even, North Carolina's always up and down, it feels like, as of late with Roy Williams. Gonzaga is the consistency, the gold standard in college basketball every single year. Even Kansas is taking dips. You're seeing Baylor win the Big 12 Conference. It's amazing what Gonzaga does. But at some point, they've got to be knocked off their perch, and BYU's got to break through. Because I thought 10 years ago, when Jimmer Fredette was beating the Zags in the NCAA tournament, I was like thinking, okay, Gonzaga, you've had a nice run, but this is now the BYU time. Like, they're coming in, and they're knocking you off, and they're going to win a few of these conference titles. I was definitely wrong because these last 10 years, it's been all Gonzaga with a few moments of St. Mary sprinkled in between. And I think that just the chance to possibly knock them off an undefeated team. I mean, you think about it. There's only been – this is the first undefeated regular season team coming into a conference tournament since – Kentucky 6 years ago, and that was a great Kentucky team with a lot of NBA talent. So it's few and far between these moments happen where you got a team that's in the postseason, they're undefeated, you knock them off, they're number one team, and you win a conference tournament title, the first one in 20 years. I mean, it's just been so hard for BYU to get one of these things. So to do it against arguably the best team in the last 30 years of college hoops, that's why I would go to the top to me. And I just think also what makes the NCAA tournament so tricky too, because I do think, you know, you always ultimately want to also obviously win in the NCAA tournament, but there's so many uncontrollables with that thing where, you know, BYU looks like they should be a five or a six seed, but you know, who knows, with a committee, they go like, oh, that's a 10 seed. And then you get paired up with some difficult team that just BYU gets outmatched with, whereas in the conference, you can control this. You see these teams every year. You know how to construct your roster to compete with these teams. Go out and do it and win the thing. And BYU's got that opportunity. Hopefully Monday night they can beat Pepperdine or Santa Clara and then have a shot at the Zags for 40 minutes and see what happens.
This team is certainly capable. Tyler Haas, if you missed that interview, we talked with him earlier in the program in hour number one, and we'll put that up on our podcast feed. It's probably already there. So if you subscribe to our podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts or at KSLSports.com, you can hear what Tyler Haas had to say about the tournament. And I'm with him. This team is beatable. And, like, there's a lot of things about this BYU basketball team, too, that I think I've taken for granted. Like, I've said repeatedly that this BYU basketball team isn't a good shooting team. And, like, I look down and, whoa, Cougars are top 25 three-point shooting percentage.
Yeah.
So they're not nearly as explosive offensively as last year's team, but they are not – they haven't taken as big of a step back in some of those categories as I felt like they had. And so if this team can shoot the ball well – and that's just one thing they have not done against Gonzaga, in my opinion, Mitch, is they just haven't shot it well enough. And in that game in Provo, especially in the second half, there were opportunities, if you make shots, to put pressure on Gonzaga. So obviously, you can't go down by 20 because that's just digging a huge hole. But they can make shots. And the guy in particular that's got to get going against the Zags, if they get there. Let's preface this whole conversation by saying they've got to get there because playing at 10 p.m. is tough. And I can make a case, Mitch, that losing on Monday might not be the worst thing. But if they get to Gonzaga, you need Alex Barcelo to shoot the ball well, because when that guy, as we saw at the end of the year and in their win against St. Mary's, and when he hit 7-7 to finish out the season, when he plays like that, this team can beat anybody. So he's a guy who's got to get going in the tournament. And after all this, this long-winded answer, I still don't know what I want. Because do I want them to play Gonzaga? Yeah, I think I do. But would I be sad if they got ousted and then they go to the tournament? No. So it's kind of a weird position to be in. And that's why this tournament is just meh. It's blah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a strange league in general. It just is. You know, like, it's outside of Gonzaga and BYU, do any of these teams have fans? No. Like, I mean, it's just it's kind of standard operating procedure for a lot of these teams. Oh, an empty building? That's what we do every day. So, I mean, that's just how it is.
Yikes.
Like, BYU.
Shots fired.
It's just the facts. Like, BYU and Gonzaga, and even Gonzaga to a lesser extent, like, BYU is the just behemoth in terms of fan base and brand. Like,
yeah.
There's not these, you know, weekly radio shows, I would imagine, with just the Zags. It's just a different animal. Like, when you got football, when you got all this, like, BYU is just so unique. But Gonzaga has just created such a powerhouse, and you just respect them, too. Like, that's what's unique about the dynamic with BYU and Gonzaga compared to, like, teams in the Mountain West. I felt like in the Mountain West Conference, there was just always these – it felt like it was BYU against everyone else. Whereas the West Coast Conference, because they're all faith-based institutions, there's like a respect for what BYU is about and how they operate. And they didn't play on Sundays for this conference tournament. And I think they just respect the purpose and the mission of BYU as a university. And naturally it creates this dynamic against a team like Gonzaga where, like BYU, they are faith-based, a little bit different dynamic, but still there's just like this respect from the administrators, the coaches, and it's just kind of like you just love it. That's about the competition on the court. It's not this extracurricular, like these fan bases are popping off on social media all the time, they're going at each other's throats. It's just about good quality basketball on the court, and you love that. Like, that's, to me, makes a great rivalry. I mean, you can enjoy and appreciate some of the weird quirks in other rivalries, but I just like BYU and Gonzaga. It's big-time basketball. It's one of the best matchups that the Western United States has to offer, because let's face it, is anyone focusing on the Pac-12 this year? No. Like, it's a decent league, but no one's batting an eye about what's going on in the Pac-12 or the Mountain West Conference. Good basketball, sure, but no one can even compare to the Zags. And when BYU goes up against them, it's a matchup that – a lot of people nationally want to watch. And if you get to that Tuesday night spot where it's a 7 p.m. tip, a lot of people around the country are going to be watching that game on national TV and here on KSL. So I want to see that opportunity to see what BYU can do with one more crack at Gonzaga this year.
Do you think BYU – let me rephrase the question, Mitch. If BYU goes and plays Gonzaga in that championship game, what do you think the score will be when it's all said and done? Do you think it's going to be a close, anyone can take that game at the end?
I do. I think BYU will keep it within less than 10 points. I think, you know, anywhere from, you know, 3 to 7 points. I'd still pick Gonzaga to win, sure. I think that's fair. I mean, they deserve that right. I mean, they're the number one team. They're the best thing that this country has to offer in college hoops. But I think BYU can keep it within less than 10 points. I do. I just think that there was enough progress from the game in Spokane to what we saw in Provo, and there'll be even more progress in Vegas too. And I really buy into this staff and their ability to adjust and just kind of find ways and angles. Like, you heard it in that interview with Cody Feger, they are not looking at, they're not taking this Monday night game the same approach like they did last year, obviously with COVID, but still, even if it wasn't a pandemic, they're going to do things different, because the way they showed up last year in the conference tournament, it was a no-show. Like, they only put up 50 points, they couldn't hit anything, and St. Mary's play, slowdown play, just impacted that game. They want to make adjustments, and as you heard, Cody figures they're being relentless about it. So I believe that this staff will find ways, any way that they can, to try to find a way to close the gap a little bit with Gonzaga. So I would expect it's going to be a closer game if they do meet up with Gonzaga on Tuesday night.
And one thing that's great about this tournament, Mitch, is this team, in terms of, now they've had their fair share of injuries, but the core guys are healthy and ready to go. So whereas last year Barcelo was not himself, and you're missing Dalton Nixon. So that wasn't a great loss against St. Mary's, but that wasn't BYU that we had seen all year. Whereas this year's team, the guys that we've been watching all year, those are the guys we're going to get Monday and hopefully Tuesday night.
Yeah, that is a great point. I think that does get forgotten because, yeah, Barcelo was hurt. I mean, we all like to romanticize what could have been last year in the NCAA tournament, but his wrist was banged up, like it was broken. And Dalton Nixon, the glue, the foundation of that team, he was, I mean, he couldn't walk. It was just, that's what it was. Whereas yep. this team, they lost Baxter, they lost Lowell, but they haven't had these little, you know, hiccups with injuries where it keeps them out for two or three games. They've stayed pretty much healthy, knock on wood. Let's hope they can maintain itself so they can make a run. Like, we want to see this BYU team make a run. Because I remember what we were talking last May. I still believe it. This team has the ability, because of how many different ways they can win games, they can make a run to the second weekend. And that's a unique situation for BYU, because history says with BYU basketball, you only get to the Sweet 16 when you have the player of the year in college basketball. They don't have that, but I still like the makeup of this roster and the depth. And I think that if they can, you know, knock down some threes like they've been doing as of late, they're going to be a spot to win some ball games here in this month, which is the best month of the year when it comes to college hoops.
We'll take one more break here in Cougar Sports Saturday. We'll wrap up the show on the other side with some news and notes in the world of BYU. Stay with us as we wrap up this edition of CSS here on KSL News Radio. Back after this. Welcome back to Cougar Sports Saturday here, March 6th. It's a beautiful day here in Utah, and thanks for spending some of it with us here on Cougar Sports Saturday. Matt Biamonte and Mitch Harper. Been a great show. We've had some tremendous guests. Cody Feger, assistant coach at BYU. BYU great. One of the greats down at BYU basketball, Tyler Haas, joined us. And then freshman wide receiver Cody Epps as well. So thanks to them for spending some time with us. But Mitch, we got to get to a program we really, not a program, but a segment here on the program we really enjoy, as we touch on some news and notes in the hurry up along BYU sports.
That's right. And BYU women's hoops, we're not going to forget to mention Jeff Judkins' squad. They are in the West Coast Conference tournament, going to be playing on Monday their first game. Like the BYU men, they'll be in the semifinal round as the 2 seed as well. And they took home a lot of West Coast Conference awards. Shaylee Gonzalez, co-player of the year in the conference, only a sophomore. Big things in store for Shaylee Gonzalez in her BYU women's basketball career. And then Jeff Judkins, named WCC Coach of the Year. It's the second time Coach Judkins has received that honor since BYU joined the league in 2011. So congrats to BYU women's basketball. They got to take care of business in Vegas, though, Matt. They're not like the men, where they're a lock to be in the tournament. They're on that bubble right now, so they got to go to Vegas with the mindset they got to win 2 games to ensure they're in the big dance.
On the men's side of things, Matt Harms named Defensive Player of the Year. He was second team All-WCC. Alex Barcelo, first team All-WCC. Brandon Averett, second team, and Caleb Lohner on the All-Freshman team. So nice to see both basketball programs recognized by the West Coast Conference.
Yeah, this piece of news over on the gridiron in the NFL shocked me, man. I'm not gonna lie, it was shocking. Kyle Vannoy, former BYU great, after 1 season in Miami with the Dolphins, he was released. Still hasn't been official yet, but Vannoy issued a statement saying he was disappointed and sad that he's being released by the Dolphins. Miami looking right now to potentially trade Kyle Vannoy, but he's on his way out of Miami due to a salary cap crunch with the Dolphins. So kind of surprising. That's just the world of the NFL, I guess you could say.
Makes no sense. I think he's the best linebacker on the team, and someone's going to benefit from this. He's probably not going to make the same amount of money, but there's a lot of playoff teams who would jump at the chance to get Vannoy. One team in particular that I think is going to generate some interest, Kansas City. I think they need some linebackers, so I wouldn't be surprised if Vannoy reunites with Danny Sorensen and adds some much-needed help to the Chiefs linebacker room. So
you know what? I love that move for Vannoy if that happens, because, one, we would see him a ton on nationally televised games, and he'd probably be another former Coug in a Super Bowl, because let's face it, the Chiefs, they're not slowing down anytime soon.
BYU football added a pair of football games to future schedules. Home and home with Ole Miss, which I think is notable. Being an SEC team, you get that 1-1. And then Dixie State has been added as well. So Dixie State's playing football right now. Kind of interesting. Former BYU quarterback Cody Wilson at the helm down there. So nice to see BYU football get an in-state game and then an SEC game as well.
Did you go to the Grove in 2011,
No, one of my great regrets.
I couldn't go because I was, I actually could have gone. I was still doing some internships here at KSL, but I did not go, and dang it. You know, I wanted to do all these things when I was young, and I was poor. It's like, now that I'm married and I have a little flexibility, I can't do anything. I got a 4-month-old home. It's just, I mean, no offense to them. I love them very much if you're listening. Love you guys, but I would have loved to have done those things when I was younger. I just couldn't afford it.
Yeah, it was. I was there, and I must say it was one of the best experiences I've ever experienced at a BYU.
Is it the best road experience you've ever had, Mitch?
That's tough to say. I would say as a fan, yes, because that tailgating scene, man, that was awesome. And being there in the Grove, and I'll say it as a single man at the Grove, it was fun. It was a good time. I had fun. Now, as a married man, be a different perspective. And as a media member, it'd be a lot more, you know, well-kept, professional. But, you know, the Grove was a good time. I had a lot of fun. It was fun. I enjoyed it. And, you know, it was terrible football game, I must say. Like,
yes.
Other than Kyle Vannoy, recently released Miami Dolphin, had it not been for him, that's a brutal game. But, man, that was a good trip. It was so hot. It was like 95 degrees. It was humid as can be. And I did not realize just that humidity. Like, it is a real thing. It's tangible. I could barely breathe. But, man, it was so much fun being down in the SEC. I love when BYU goes to games in SEC country because it's just a different mindset. It's a way of life college football is down in the SEC. So I'm glad to see Ole Miss back on the schedule and to get them coming to Provo, too. And the first game is going to be in Provo in 2028, and then BYU returns to the Grove in 2029. What was kind of depressing, though, Matt, was I was 23 when BYU went to the Grove. I'm going to be 41 the next time they go to the Grove.
Oh, man.
So that's a little bit more depressing, I must say. But I digress. 6 BYU football players made the NFL Combine. That's well known. But what's impressive is that tied for 11th nationally in the most invitees by one college to be sent going to the NFL Combine. So a banner year for BYU football at the NFL Draft.
In related news, because a lot of the Combine's digital, each team in the NFL gets 5 Zoom opportunities with a given player. Mm-hmm. And Zach Wilson has met with an interesting team a couple of times already, Mitch. The Jacksonville Jaguars, who possess the number 1 pick. Quarterback coach, I think it's Brian Schottenheimer, met with John Beck a few times. Are you thinking there might be a chance Zach Wilson bumps up to number 1 overall?
Man, I wish, but I don't think there's any chance at all. I think this is just simply due diligence by Jacksonville, just making sure they're crossing their T's, dotting their I's, doing all the homework necessary to make sure that this, you know, multi-million dollar, tens of millions of dollar investment that they're going to make is the right one with Trevor Lawrence. So I think it's just due diligence, and it's the right move to make. I mean, just you want to make sure that you know everything about all these top prospects, and Zach Wilson is clearly one of those top guys. No, I don't think he's going to be the number 1 pick at all. It's Trevor Lawrence, and that's fine. And now Zach Wilson, it's the conversation could be, will he be number 2? Will he be number 3? I think it's going to be number 2. Just matter which team is it going to be.
Anybody but the Jets, please. Dallin, your Carolina Panthers, can they trade up? Get this guy. You get to work with Joe Brady. You get Christian McCaffrey, some nice receivers. Carolina, here we come, baby.
But Carolina would be brutal from a standpoint of no one watches Carolina Panthers games.
Like,
you would never see him on Sunday Night Football. If you don't have the Sunday ticket, you're never seeing Zach Wilson.
Are you going to with the Jets? I mean,
they're
horrible.
The Jets are always a story. Like, they're a train wreck, and they're always a story.
Anybody but the Jets, please.
He'd be in
please.
The national media cycle all the time with the Jets.
Yeah, well, he'd be on Greenberg on First Take or Get Up, would be talking about him left and right. Anyways, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the NFL draft. Last quick thing, Chase Roberts, wide receiver, back from a mission. Not going to play in spring ball, but he'll be in the mix at wide receiver.
Yeah, and he just followed Cougar Sports Saturday on Instagram. So you should as well. At CSSBYU, at KSL Sports, at Biamonte Matt, and at Mitch underscore Harper. That's a lot of ads for you to handle. Appreciate all of you. We'll talk to you next week, recapping the WCC tournament and previewing March Madness. Talk to you then here on Cougar Sports Saturday.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas,
in the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.